Our first reading this morning is taken from Psalm 17. And you can see in the Bible, it's on page 550. It's headed A Prayer of David. That's King David. And it's a prayer reaching out to God for his faithful, merciful love. Hear, O Lord, my righteous plea. Listen to my cry. Give ear to my prayer. It does not rise from deceitful lips. May my vindication come from you. May your eyes see what is right. Though you probe my heart and examine me at night, though you test me, you will find nothing. I have resolved that my mouth will not sin. As for the deeds of men, by the words of your lips I have kept myself from the ways of the violent. My steps have held to your paths. My feet have not slipped. I call on you, O God, for you will answer me. Give ear to me and hear my prayer. Show the wonder of your great love. You who save by your right hand those who take refuge in you from their foes. Keep me as the apple of your eye. Hide me in the shadow of your wings from the wicked who assail me, from my mortal enemies who surround me. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
The second reading is taken from the book of Romans, chapter 8, beginning at verse 22. We know that the whole creation has been groaning, as in the pains of childbirth, right up to the present time. Not only so, but we ourselves, who have the first fruits of the Spirit, groan inwardly as we wait eagerly for our adoption as sons, the redemption of our bodies. For in this hope we were saved. But hope that is seen is no hope at all. Who hopes for what he already has? But if we hope for what we do not yet have, we wait for it patiently. In the same way, the Spirit helps us in our weakness. We do not know what we ought to pray for, but the Spirit himself intercedes for us with groans that words cannot express. And he who searches our hearts knows the mind of the Spirit, because the Spirit intercedes for the saints in accordance with God's will. And we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. For those God foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the likeness of his Son, that he might be the firstborn among many brothers. And those he predestined, he also called. Those he called, he also justified. Those he justified, he also glorified. What then shall we say in response to this? If God is for us, who can be against us? He who did not spare his own Son, but gave him up for us all, how will he not also, along with him, graciously give us all things? Who will bring any charge against those whom God has chosen? It is God who justifies. This is the word of the Lord.
Well, it's been a while, hasn't it, since I've been up here, probably getting on for 20 years. But of course, thanks to Tom for inviting me. And of course, for all of you for turning out on for what is, in the forces, our special day, isn't it? It's a day where we remember our fallen comrades and many others. But I wanted to start with a question for every one of us here, and it's this. Is there anything in your life that you remember that was really powerful, that made you move forward spiritually or in your work or in relationships or something important? And if so, was that thing ever easy? I think the reluctant answer for most of us here, if we're being honest, is that, oh yes, there was something. But actually, it was deeply unpleasant at the time. It was stressful. But I have to grudgingly admit that in the end, it helped enormously. One line I use often with young people is this. I say, look, if you want the fast track to success and victory, do three things. One is have children. Two is get married. Three, start your own business. Not necessarily in that order. But the point is, if you do, you will have everything in your life that doesn't work, that could possibly go wrong. But you will learn an awful lot from it, if you don't fail. I have to add that war is a little bit like that as well. Believe it or not, I remember many moons ago when I was a curate here, some of you will remember. And of course, in Western, we have lots of retirement homes, don't we? It's a, I suppose, God's anteroom. We're on the coast. And I found a lot of my time was doing funerals for the bereaved and the elderly and so on. Actually, I did so many funerals when I was here that if I was driving out around Argos Way or Sainsbury's, you know, and sort of vaguely forgot where I was going, I would turn into the crematorium automatically. It was such a well-trodden path. It really was. But one of the things I noticed about so many of those funerals back then, not so much now, but back then, was how important in the life of the deceased person the war had been. What had they done in the war? What effect had their experiences had upon them? And it was hugely disproportionate. It affected them, most of them, if not all of them, for the rest of their lives, and normally, I may add, for the good. Sometimes not so. But I'd like to start today by quoting an American great hero, General Stonewall Jackson. He was a hero of the American Civil War. And he said this, "War is the sum of all that is evil." And it is. But as the saying goes, war is also sweet to those who have never been there. You see, war is something that still seems to captivate people's interest, isn't it? Particularly men. I think it was the Greek poet Homer, and I don't mean Bart Simpson's father, I mean the guy who lived 800 BC. He said, "Men will get bored of poetry, women, love, wine and song long before they get bored of war." I think it's very profound and often true. Because the Bible tells us that we are children of wrath, aren't we? In more ways than one. Even lovely King David, he was bluntly told by God, "You will not build the temple because you are a man of blood." But I think if we're honest, one of our mistakes in Britain today is that you and I have broadly lived through a benign time, haven't we? A time of peace. Broadly, we have not been invaded. We have not been subjugated. We haven't really suffered, except maybe from the television. And every time we see another terrorist atrocity online or on the TV or on the news, our hearts are broken. And we long for that peace to come back, you know, to stop this dreadful, terrible thing. But I have to say, as I look at human history, the default is not peace interspersed with war. It's actually quite the opposite. We have war, and occasionally peace breaks out. Now sadly the young are not necessarily told this truth, and it's nice in one way, isn't it, that we are shocked by violence and when the shooting starts. But it should show us how lucky we are and how lucky we have been. And we must never forget the cost. I remember when I elected to first go into the forces all those years ago, I was told by one of the officers who interviewed me, "Oh, in your 16-year career, you know, you will probably deploy to an overseas operation probably twice, and you won't be in any danger." This was some time after 9/11, those of us who remember, you know, Osama bin Laden had flown his planes into the towers. The West had mobilized, and we had destroyed the Taliban regime of Afghanistan and beheaded the Iraqi dictator in two very quick lightning campaigns. And I thought, job done. The sort of kinetic, the fighting bit, was all over by the shouting. But as we know, as St. Paul tells us in his letter, all creation groans as in childbirth, doesn't it? And for those of you who've had children, one contraction follows another. And of course, as Christians, we to paraphrase what Paul says, we are all eagerly awaiting God's blessing, aren't we? His adoption of us. The redemption of our bodies from what is actually an evil world. And we sometimes experience the good and the blessing, but sometimes the bad as well. But unlike the rest of the world, I would add, we have hope. Anyway, I joined the RAF, actually, and praised the Lord as I went through the training, thanking God as I was crawling through the barbed wire and then the mud. I was a bit older than many of the other cadets, but I did know what to expect, and all would be well. I was very pleased when one of my bosses phoned me up later and said, "How would you like a holiday in the sun?" I was sent to Iraq just to do a bit of occupation, you know, nothing too bad, but actually nothing really prepared me for what we went through that time. The aircraft we were coming in on was a Hercules. Some of you will know those things. The first we knew anything was wrong was the loadmaster, who's the cabin crew, I suppose, came racing back, screaming at us over the engine noise, because it's loud, to put on all our body armor and our helmets. All the lights went out, and the aircraft plummeted from the sky. Just revving up very fiercely at the end so we wouldn't crash. This was what was known as a tactical landing, because, of course, the bad guys on the ground would take a crack at you, so you had to get down very quickly. I remember people coming off that plane. Many of us were sick and terrified, and I pretended not to be, but I was probably just as bad as the next person. Now, naturally, my prayer life swung into reality with great gusto and gumph at that point. And also the Bible, I may add, became the most exciting read on earth. Brilliant. It's something to be aware of, you see. I think the Lord does hear us when we cry out to him sincerely, you know, when we're in a jam, when we are in real danger. Paradoxically, he won't listen to a jot of what we're saying if we are a grumbler, a Christian who whinges. You know, we can all surely recognize in the Old Testament how the Israelites, they grumbled, didn't they, in the desert. They who had seen the miracles, they'd seen Pharaoh's army obliterated, they'd seen water from the rock and the manna from heaven, they were still unhappy about everything. "It's not right, the pay rise is too small, I don't like my neighbor, I don't like my cat, I don't like my family or my leaders," and on and on and on. And God's reaction eventually was to sentence them to change from what would have been an 11-day journey into the promised land to a 40-year one. They chose to fail, didn't they? They really embraced it and stuck at failure for 40 years. I fear many of us do the same. We would rather do the bare minimum to avoid getting into hell than actually receive what God really has for us. So if you have problems, and we all do, the first thing to do is take responsibility for the suffering and patiently and repeatedly thank God for his deliverance in advance, because only then will it come if we let it. The problem was for me at that time in that part of Iraq where I was based, we were effectively under siege. You know, various terrorist and insurgent groups were attacking us the whole time. I saw the sort of haunted look in the eyes of the person I was replacing and the terrible exhaustion that they'd all been through. And I thought, well, this is going to be a great holiday in the sun, isn't it? But strangely enough, as the days went by, you know, the bad guys, they did attack us again and again and again. But I was more or less led to this passage that Hillary read to us. as well as other parts of the word, Psalm 91. And I sort of knew deep down, without knowing how I knew, that I would survive when, sadly, others did not. You see, on this Remembrance Sunday, I remember when I grew up, and we went through the tradition, I found all this war memorial stuff really rather boring, rather irrelevant. But now I don't see the wood and the stone anymore. I see faces of people who I've known who are now gone. One face I will never forget, a young army lieutenant who died in my arms. You know, why him and not me? Why him? How could any of that be any good? Well, of course, it wasn't good, was it? But good can come out of it. Paul says in verse 28 that all things, that includes the bad things, the evil things, the unfair things, the disastrous things, will work for good for those who love God. I remember moaning in my prayer time about the fear and the danger, you know, the towering rage of the rocket and the artillery attacks. We would actually feel it in our bodies before you'd hear it. You'd hear it for a second and then you were completely deaf for the next half an hour. And when we felt them, the drill was to hit the dirt. And if you did not, you were dead and stay down. I remember once we were doing a Holy Communion service in the chapel and the shooting started. So we were all lying down and we decided to sort of keep on with the service, all of us looking up at the ceiling. Very strange, rather amusing, and actually quite entertaining, but we did that. Why not? And that was funny, but sometimes not so funny. When we had to say farewell to the fallen, you know, we'd have a perfunctory service, a quick salute, put the box onto the aircraft because the Prime Minister of the time had decreed that we would all come home dead or alive. How could any of it work for good? And perhaps you may feel something of the same about the tragedies in your own life that you've experienced, the bereavements, the futility, the pain and the loss, the anger. But Paul says to all of us, we are called according to God's purpose. And our choice is whether to accept it or just to sit this one out. I remember a young chaplain friend of mine, we were ministering there one day when in came a whole barrage of these rockets. I was flung across the room, computers were flung off desks, and my young colleague, he was thrown rather hard up into the corner of the room. And it turned out that he'd broken his shoulder very badly. So we, of course, took him to the hospital, which was a little bit like, those of you who remember the program MASH, you know, it was a bit like a whole load of tents in the middle of nowhere, you know, a great hospital. But I remember crying out to God about this, saying, what is this all about? This is one of your very own people. You know, we're special, aren't we? We who are ordained or who are doing your work. Well, yes and no. But I visited him the next day and something rather strange happened. After the scan, the nurse, who I knew quite well, came over to me and said, look, we found a cancerous tumour in that boy's shoulder. Had he not been blown up and broken it right there, he would be dead in under a year. We would never have found it till it was too late. As it is now, he is going to live a full life, and that's a miracle. So that was a Romans 8:28 moment, I suppose. In all these things, even the bad things, and God sometimes shows us this, doesn't he? Very clearly, we are more than conquerors. Should we feel guilty, those of us who survived, or those of us who failed? No, but we remember, and that's what today is about, isn't it? Of course, we remember the heroics, don't we? Heroic deeds, stories that come back. But if the truth be told, we've all failed. There are no heroes in this world. There's only ordinary people like you and I, sometimes in extraordinary situations. There only ever was one hero, and that's him who died for you and for me while we were yet sinners. Would you have done that? Would I? I'd have let them burn. No way would I do that. But Jesus did it. And he didn't die spitting revenge or hate against the enemy either. He forgave them, as he's prepared to forgive you and me. One of the small difficult conditions, I suppose, he leaves us is that we too have to forgive those who've wounded us. The good, the bad, and the ugly. It's simple, but very difficult to do, isn't it? We have to forgive our enemies, or indeed love them up to a point. I think that's why the centurion in Mark's Gospel at the end, you know, you have to see what this guy was like. He was a grizzled old warrant officer whose duty it was to deal out death and execute people. So this was no pink and fluffy person. In fact, it was his job to manage crucifixions, wasn't it, among other things. And even he was impressed as he saw our Lord die. He paused at the cross and he said words that we must never forget. Surely this man was the Son of God. Amen.